students that are with us in the audience from Green River Community College. This is Forest Policy and Government at Work, and the best of it, in spite of its appearances sometimes. So enjoy yourselves, and thanks for being here. Forestry and natural resource management is an exciting field to be in right now. The world is changing around us. We've got a lot of important work to do. That work is going to be up to you, and not to put too much pressure on you. But I look forward to doing that work with you. So have fun, and thanks for joining us. So we have a lengthy discussion upcoming on the Type FN rape dispute resolution, and we will begin that with a short presentation from Jim. I want to acknowledge for board members or let board members know that the cadence of this agenda item will be to have a short presentation from Jim, a Q&A with Jim, and then we will call up individual policy representatives to talk about and receive questions from the board about the dispute. We will then, toward the end of the agenda item, I've requested a staff recommendation for a motion as to how the board will proceed. We will project that on the screen, walk through it briefly. You'll have the benefit of the time over lunch to review it and discuss if you so choose. Come back from lunch, have the general public comment period, have the action item comment period, and then we will move the motion with such amendments and clarifications as we find necessary. I will, for I think probably the 15th or so time, remind folks who are acutely concerned about this conversation and for the benefit of board members that the board is going to today order a cheeseburger as far as what next steps we're going to progress with on this issue. There is a great temptation out in the world to specify on what day the cow was born and what color the ear tag is and whether it was vaccinated and so on and so forth. We're not going to do that. We're going to order something today. So let's caution ourselves against being overly specific. So with that, Jim, please enlighten us.
And hold the prize.
Well done. And you said something about a short presentation. So I don't normally like to read. In fact, I rarely ever read. But as I go through, you're going to find me reading parts because I want to. I don't want to misquote, misrepresent something that is either in the FFR, the Forest and Fish Report, or the HCT, or a board manual, or board direction in the past. So I think you're well aware that policy's been working on the water typing issue now for some time, but in particularly a concerted effort starting in January of 2012. At least to one caucus, there didn't appear to be that much traction being made, and so they chose in January of 2013, which is a year ago, to invoke dispute resolution. In February of the same year, 1 month later, policy agreed that the resolution of dispute resolution would be a charter. So now we're into a six-month process with stage one dispute resolution. You have six months to resolve the dispute, which would have been June, the beginning of June. And so the idea was to then to have a charter by the beginning of June. They didn't quite make it until June, but they were able to agree on categories of the dispute. Off-channel habitat likely to be used by fish, electrofishing, protocol surveys, and physical default criteria, use of the model to produce a GIS model, regression model to produce fish habitat and water type maps and rule guidance and implementation. They also believed that they were making progress and so chose to extend stage one, which is they're able to do. They extended it until September. By September, there was still no charter. And so one of the caucuses then invoked stage two dispute resolution to go into stage two. At stage two, you choose either mediation or arbitration. Policy at that time chose mediation. So beginning in September, they had 3 months, in other words, until September, the beginning of September, to resolve the dispute, come up with a charter by December. In December, they still didn't have a charter, and so there was a non-consensus in policy to extend stage two, which again they could have done, but instead some of the caucuses chose to bring the issues to the board for resolution. So stage one, stage two, and then coming to the board, all part of rule and the board manual. So they're following the board manual. So one of the things I want to do is I want to go a little bit back, get a little bit of glossary for some of you to be fresh, for others it won't, but I want to introduce a little bit of glossary, a little bit of the dictionary. So I want to go back to the Forest and Fish report in HCP first, followed by a direction from the board. Obviously, water typing was a key component of the 1999 fish Forest and Fish riparian strategy. One of the issues centered around accuracy of water type base maps used to establish fish presence and absence for purposes of implementing appropriate forest practice protection measures. The riparian strategy in the Forest and Fish report included two water typing systems. A water typing system that classifies surface waters, including rivers, streams, lakes, ponds, impoundments, and tidal waters, and then a wetland typing system. I'm going to concentrate on the water typing system. I just want to let you know there were two water typing systems in the riparian strategy. According to the Forest and Fish report, fish habitat to be incorporated with the Type F water designation, fish habitat waters, or Type F, was to be determined by a GIS logistic regression model. That is now our first issue, and I'm going to bring these issues up in turn. So the first issue before policy was the model. As used here in fish habitat, now I'm going to be talking about the second issue before policy, which is definition of fish habitat. As used here in fish habitat means habitat which is used by fish at any life stage, at any time of the year, including potential habitat likely to be used by fish, which could be recovered by restoration or management, and includes off-channel habitat. Off-channel habitat is our third issue in front of policy. And then it goes on, the fish habitat will be established based upon a multi-parameter, field-verified, peer-reviewed GIS logistic regression model using geomorphic parameters such as basin size, gradient, elevation, and other indicators. In my memo to you, I indicated that that's in the Forest and Fish Report, page 14. It's actually Appendix A, page 14. Appendix A. As far as a performance target for the model, it was to have a high level of accuracy, plus or minus 5% error. And the error would be equally allocated over and under prediction of fish habitat. So now we're at our fourth issue for policy, and that's the error. The risks between resource protection and timber harvest as determined by a model with statistical accuracy of plus or minus 5% will be revised so that the line demarcating fish and non-fish habitat waters will be drawn so as to be equally likely to be over and under inclusive. That's where we get the notion of shared risk. And so shared risk is an issue in policy. These are all excerpts from the Forest and Fish report. The next one is related to the Habitat Conservation Plan and comes from the National Marine Fisheries Biological Opinion. Shared risk was assumed regardless of the method used for identifying fish-bearing waters. In quotes, failure to correctly identify fish-bearing waters will occur and is assumed to lessen over time. It is assumed that any methods used to map or delineate such waters will have an approximately equal probability of identifying waters as fish-bearing where fish do not actually occur, or the reverse, identifying waters as non-fish-bearing where fish actually do occur. I go on to the next issue before policy, and that's electrofishing, again from the FFR. With regard to electrofishing, the FFR anticipated that, in quotes, electrofishing to prove the presence or absence of fish will no longer affect stream type determination from an operational standpoint. Also Appendix A, page 14, under the riparian strategy. So in summary, I just mentioned forest and fish report expectations that are centers of debate in policy. The use of the model, definition of fish habitat, application of shared risk, and use of electrofishing. And I should mention in-stream off-channel habitat as well. So now let me go to board direction. And I should say that these aren't the only issues in policy. They are key issues in policy. So going back to 2001, the board defined fish habitat as habitat which is used by fish at any life stage, at any time of the year, including potential habitat likely to be used by fish, which could be recovered by restoration or management, and includes off-channel habitat. That's in WAC 222-16-030, the current, what we call the interim rule, or the current rule. It's also what I quoted out of the Forest and Fish Report. In 2001, the board also declared that until the fish habitat water type maps are adopted by the board, the interim water typing system established in WAC 222-16-031 will continue to be used. In other words, the current rule, the interim rule. And they declared that, and now I'm going to talk about what's called the permanent rule, or that based on the model, that the department will prepare water type maps showing the location of type S, F, and N waters within the forested areas of the state. The maps will be based on the model, so I'm not going to continue reading. I've said it twice. Including achieving the level of accuracy, the 5% level of accuracy, plus or minus. In 2005, as a result of the model not achieving the target level of accuracy, the board chose not to adopt the model-generated water type maps and retained the current process for delineating type F waters by taking no formal rule action or retaining what's called the current rule or the interim rule, WAC 222-16-031. Board minutes indicate that DNR should, for a limited duration, implement a hybrid option which allow DNR to update the water type base and activity maps and incorporate the new S, F, and N symbology from 222-16030, again, which is euphemistically called the permanent rule. But lacking adoption of the model to continue using the current rule, in other words, WAC 222-16-031, again, which we call the interim rule or the current rule, for delineating type F waters using physical characteristics or following a protocol survey methodology such as electrofishing or requesting an ID team. So that's the most recent. 2005 was the most recent direction given to policy or DNR. So the issues under dispute, which I listed some of them, I didn't list all of them, but I wanted to give you a good flavor of what the topics have been or what some of the concerns have been. Identification and protection of off-channel habitat likely to be used by fish, protection of stream-associated wetlands, electrofishing for determination of fish use presence, accuracy of the current water typing system and delineating FNP break, accuracy of the default criteria in determining fish habitat, in other words, the criteria used in the interim rule, downgrading streams that have been field surveyed and determined to have fish, accuracy and use of a model to produce fish habitat water maps, the balance of errors and associated risk in establishing the break, in other words, this shared risk concept, the definition of fish habitat, definition of defined channel and permanent natural barriers, and finally, rule and guidance implementation. So as I indicated, and there was a non-consensus in policy with regard to how to resolve the various issues and concerns that various policy members had. And because there was no consensus, the next step, according to rule and board manual, was for the issue to come to the board for resolution. And that's where we're at.
Questions for Jim? I've got one. So we've got the issues under dispute entail component pieces of existing rule or permanent rule or commitments of the force and fish agreement or the take permits or the buy-offs. But I feel like the issue that's really at the heart of the dispute is the extent to which those changes might have a corresponding effect on the overall footprint of the Type F buffers from current practice. Is that accurate?
So I would say so, yes.
Is that the thing that's at the center of the dispute? Is
that that and including, I think, off-channel habitat.
Sure. Yeah. So that, I note the absence of quantitative information about that from the memos, largely, and from the discussions that I've seen in policy about that. Why is that not entered into the conversation at this point if that's the thing that's really the central part of the dispute? I ask you to speculate.
Yeah. Presentations have been made by participants, particularly, at least in my time here, which came after 2005. But during the mediation process, each of the caucuses gave a presentation. And during some of the presentations, there was quite a bit of quantitative, let's say, information given.
And that
it's
failed.
Obviously not in these records. But.
Okay. And that didn't move the conversation forward in mediation? It didn't assist in helping people calibrate the effects of the different choices that they were advocating?
Yeah, if you're asking, okay, let me back up. If you're asking whether do we use physicals, do we use a model, what's the problem with the model, what's the problem with physicals, and what does a footprint look like, no, there hasn't been that kind of discussion. In other words, in terms of moving the FN break downstream or upstream, and what would that mean in terms of additional buffers, no, there's none of that discussion. So how big of an issue is it in terms of area? I don't think, at least, landowners may know, but I don't think many the rest of us would know. So is it a minor or major issue? I don't know.
Other questions for Jim?
Sure. Again, just a lot of learning on my part, but has there been any discussion if the F&M break is central in terms of regulating the size of the buffers. Has there been any discussions about buffer size scaled to proportion of fish in the stream or the potential for fish in the stream? See what I'm saying? Is it? I mean, you draw a black and white line, and in reality, you're probably dealing with something less than black and white on the ground. And I know touching barriers is probably as toxic as touching the F&N line, but if we're looking at some sort of proportional risk, and you know, it ought to be proportional to the amount of buffer we set as well as the potential for fish to be in the stream. Did that make sense?
Enough. This is going to be kind of a hard question to answer because the agreement by policy to settle the dispute was only to come up with a charter, and where the charter would have objectives and tasks. The difficulty is they did get a lot into tasks and a lot into details about basically our beginning to negotiate the objectives, you might say. But in terms of discussions of like that, no, they hadn't quite gotten there. Personally, I think it would have been better if they would have stayed at the objectives level, and because they just couldn't get past developing objectives. And I know I might be insulting somebody, but
I mean, we said, as I understand it, we said we were going to try to draw a line.
Yeah.
Line somewhere, and that line was going to be determined by a model that had to be so such and such had such and such accuracy. I'm looking for another way to skin the cat here. I mean, I'm looking for some other way to if we couldn't come up with a model that had the accuracy it needs. So it makes me ask: is there another way to do this? One, it also makes me ask: are we too insular? And that's not a criticism. I just don't know. But have we had the model expertise that we need to try to refine and provide the precision that we need? Have we looked far and wide to try and obtain that?
So I would say that there are alternatives to the model. The current rules, for example, the physicals are an alternative to the model. And part of the discussion has been, do we use the model or do we not use the model, do we use the physicals? Part of the discussion has been criticism of the model, but also there are some caucuses that have concern with the physicals. So yeah, I think the whole idea would be to come out of policy, out of the task, through the objectives, to come up with a system that everybody would agree to. So yeah, there's, you know, it's kind of like permanent versus the interim. We do have two distinct, set of rules we're following now, and one that was proposed back 13 years ago, 14 years ago. As far as the model goes, no work has been done on the model, to my knowledge, since prior to 2005, maybe. And so I think it is one of the open questions is with better data, could we do better as far as the model? For example, using LIDAR and improving the ability to.
How about this one, Jim? Do we have a sense of the percentage of forest practices applications that fall into the no man's land, fall into the section of stream in question? I mean, are we talking about 5% of all forest practice applications, or are we talking about 95%?
Yeah, you're back into the, is this a minor problem or a major problem? I have no idea. We'd have to ask ops, the operations folks, that question, but I really have no idea.
Seems a pretty fundamental question, doesn't it?
So, Jim, it sounds like bringing this package to the board, that from what I'm understanding you saying and going into this issue, that the package is kind of sour, particularly on issues surrounding the model. We're dealing with what I would consider old data doesn't incorporate some of the new technologies. And so what I'm getting from you is like, it's an either or question, and I don't think the question's ripe yet. I think there needs to be more examination, particularly from the model perspective, before, at least in my opinion as a board member, before I would be willing to give really firm definition to go one way or another.
So unfortunately, I don't get to make decisions for policy, but I would have my own opinion on that.
Talking to the right outfit.
Yeah.
Something about that. Yeah. Other questions for Jim? I do want to get us moving through some of the caucus representatives, given Jim a generous share of time here.
that probably answered more than I should have, since probably answering policy questions for policy.
We won't take your statements as representing a position of any individual caucus. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks.
I'd like the co-chairs to come up and join us, please. Hello again, gentlemen.
Good morning again.
Why do we have this dispute? Why were we unable to conclude the dispute resolution process successfully?
You want to go first?
I'll go.
This is a dispute.
Well, not to be a little bit smart, but we're dealing with 12 different caucuses represented at the table. We're dealing with an issue that has ramifications, significant ramifications, to all of those caucuses. The adaptive management program, in its design, in my opinion, is fairly well tuned to deal with what I would characterize as discrete policy issues. So, you know, should the buffer on a particular stream be X? Those of you who are around for DFC probably remember that. And it's unlikely that people would point to that as a successful outcome as adaptive management, but it was in many respects. This is a bit broader issue in the sense of that while it is about a point, there's a lot of value judgments on that point. And as a result of, you know, those complexities, it makes it challenging to work through, because I think a lot of caucuses feel they got certain, you know, promises within the overarching forest and fish agreement. I think many caucuses feel that they didn't get as much as they would have liked to. In fact, I would argue probably all caucuses. And I think to a certain degree, people sort of view this as a sort of, you know, overarching issue that has a lot of those values impugned on it. So that's not a discrete answer. I can certainly, we can get into some of the details here in a little bit on what might help in terms of direction from the board. But I don't think there's sort of a single point that you could sort of say that was the problem.
I noticed in the five caucus recommendation that there were four main bullet items, many of which Jim has covered in the overview of the issues in play: off-channel habitat, electrofishing, the model, rule and guidance implementation. And those types of issues in different contexts and using slightly different words are raised in just about every other caucus's memo to the board. So when I read through all of the memos and take them under advisement and consideration, it's a bit baffling that there seems to be agreement about, you know, working on those issues, but after multiple stages of dispute resolution, and I mean, granted, the fundamental nature of the issue is the reason. We though, after all those stages of dispute resolution, we're not able to embody those commonalities in a charter. To start work. So I hear what you're saying, but I just find it sort of inexplicable that we weren't able to, you know, move ahead. If we weren't able to bite the entire thing off, why weren't we able to bite a charter off that had a few components in it that could start to work? So people weren't frustrated with the lack of progress about arguing over the resource objectives and a few other things. Why didn't we put a partial charter together and leave some issues in the parking lot and come back to them after the work and start to be completed?
I would say there's probably lack of agreement on priorities. I mean, that charter, if you were to look at the draft version of it, while it had some commonalities that the chair mentioned, has a whole lot of detail underneath that is important to various caucuses. And I think concerns about sort of the overall timing of completing work, priorities, the interactions between various issues all played into that. And I'm not offering that as an excuse, but simply an explanation of, you know, some of the challenges with the dynamics in the room. You know, the use of dispute resolution, you know, is intended to be a, you know, a constructive element despite its name. It puts, you know, it induces some pressures to hopefully force some compromise. And I think just the sheer volume of issues that were being grasped with made that tough to do. Again, kind of falling back, if you've got a discrete issue that you can manage, that structure works better. To be more specific and, you know, more blunt, policy as a body isn't a full-time operation. All of us have other jobs, other responsibilities, and there are real limits on the amount of time we can all take to work on this stuff. These issues take a lot of time by themselves. You put them into one big group, it's tough to manage. And I think to a certain extent, you know, our inability to come to an agreement, I think dealt with the fact that there was just too much for the Type F issue on the plate at once. And frankly, by the time I think we began to recognize that, we had already been through the better part of the dispute resolution process. If I had my time machine, I think breaking this into pieces and trying to seek compromise from the caucuses in terms of, we can bite this piece of type off, then this piece, and maybe we work on this piece over time. Some kind of an agreement along those lines may have been more helpful.
I'd like to also add, I mean, we're sitting here, we're disappointed in our own process at this point, at this juncture. You know, the assumption is that everybody's going to work towards consensus. But as you have said, and my collaborator on the right has said, this is a fundamental piece of how force practices work. So there's a lot of chips on the table, depending on what you want to do. And I think, as he also said, I believe that the dispute resolution process is meant to deal with when you have a more discrete issue that you hit the wall on. So my disappointment in the process is that if we truly had a disagreement where we hit the wall on it, and we could come and give that to you and say, here's the pros and cons, or here's where we want to fall, we were making progress. But as you've also identified, we're making progress on a charter, and we were slogging through it, and everybody was, instead of staying at a high level, treating every word as being important. I'm not saying that's wrong. It's just the question is, people wanted to delve into the details and get into the solutions before we had agreement on what the problem was. The other thing that I will say is there are some issues on the table that we haven't had a whole lot of discussion about what's the reality on the ground. So I think there are some opportunities. For example, if we went out in the field and actually looked at some off-channel habitat to potentially get resolution and quit talking about it around the conference room and to move the issue forward, just as I think that it would be good to actually have, we had some information come to us from one of the caucuses on on what they thought the current system provides as far as accuracy of fish. But I think, again, there's more data out there that we haven't taken advantage of. Those are all things that if we had gotten agreement on a charter that we had tasked to do. But those are things, if we're going to move forward, we got to take this up in bite-sized pieces and move forward on some of these issues and take a more realistic look in order to deal with it.
I could add to that point. I think one of the challenges on this issue is that we were dealing with a lot of assumptions about process, a lot of assumptions about rule implementation, and frankly, many of them may be accurate. And what we really lacked was the ability to gather some, in my mind, important baseline information, which I think Stephen was alluding to. And I don't think this should be read as, you know, we need a six-year CMER study. There's information out there on many of these topics that could at least give us a temperature of where we're at, getting to that, you know, sort of the magnitude of the concern. And perhaps, you know, some caucuses might think that, you know, we'll go get some information and that'll show everything's hunky-dory, and off we go. Conversely, and more likely the case, we'll probably see something where there needs to be some degree of improvement. But understanding sort of the scope and magnitude of the issues, I think, is a first step into kind of building some trust around how we might be able to move forward. And that's, I mean, you know, looking back on, you know, some of the more challenging policy conversations that I've witnessed in my time working with this. You know, I alluded to it earlier this morning. You can have fierce disagreements about data. You can have fierce disagreements about the implication, the policy implication of that data. But I like arguing about data. It's much harder to have a constructive conversation when Stephen and I are talking about each other's feelings on a particular subject.
I'm picturing that now. not an image I care to have.
You hit
on the issue of trust a second ago, and that's that's what I'm hearing. That's what I'm seeing in what we have here. We don't trust each other, and that's disappointing. We should all expect to trust but verify, but we can at least start with trust. And then I think from what I hear out of the results of the dispute resolution process, the mediation, you know, we've become pretty interested in making the perfect the enemy of the good. And I don't think we can do business that way either. I think though, you know, as co-chairs and with the help of the facilitation that the board's decided to pay for the time being, that, you know, Not only are the policy participants responsible for that unto themselves, but the co-chairs and the facilitators are responsible for trying to break that cycle when we see it happen. I'm disappointed in that, too.
Understand.
Questions?
You guys came up and talked about the postmortem this morning, and same caucuses are in the room. And those appeared to be successful. Flowing smoothly. What's the difference? Successful, yeah, as you.
Scope, and in my opinion, having some quantitative information as part of the discussion.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. Scope, and yeah, in the type N discussion, we have data, the mass wasting discussion. We have data. We might not agree on the data, but we have something to talk about. Where a lot of the policy discussions that have occurred on Type F over the last, particularly the last 6 months, has been philosophical to some degree, and it's really hard to argue that without relating to the important fact of how you apply it on the ground.
Star, do you have a question? Sorry. Any questions for the co-chairs? Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
I would like to have Mary Skurlock from the Conservation Caucus join us, please.
Is there like a cone hat or something that I need to wear?
That'll be part of the motion. I read in of the six recommendations that are made in the Conservation Caucus memo, I read three of them containing the statement, these specifically recommendations 1, 2, or 3, that no further empirical inquiry is required. And then recommendation 5 says there's reason to believe that if the model maps are never adopted, so on and so forth, we could, though, improve on the use of the model by improving the quality of base data that goes into it. I just don't understand the distinction between those.
They're separate issues that are raised in each recommendation. And I think that I just want to ask for what has come before. I want to thank Jim for doing a really great job on putting this package together. And I want to thank the board for devoting enough time to this today. And I also want to thank Adrienne and Stephen for doing what I think was a really solid job of reflecting what went on and why. So most of what I have to say in response to what's come before your question doesn't respond to that. But just generally, in listening just now and in some of the discussion we've had over the last week, when we brought this issue to dispute resolution, the issues that we had in mind were largely about resolving issues that we saw as sort of policy slash quasi-legal issues about our objectives. Exactly what was said earlier by Jim, we couldn't get past the objectives. And the reason that we couldn't get past the objectives is because we were arguing about questions that really weren't data-based. A number of the fundamental questions were not data-based. They were about what was our resource objective. Without the model on fish habitat and stream typing, was it the definition of fish habitat, or was it something else? Did we have a duty to move off the interim rule? We believe that we did, that the time had expired, that we had a duty, in fact, to reduce electrofishing to some level that remains to be discussed because of the supercharge issues around that. I am absolutely not opposed to further collection of data on any number of issues. However, I think that you'll see that the recommendations that we made regarding clarification of our objective on, you know, what is the goal that we're trying to reach here with this? Are we, in fact, about trying to protect off-channel habitat to that level that we originally anticipated in the permanent rule or not? Those were yes or no questions to us. And then we felt that having those questions asked and answered, we could do our work at policy. The problem was we did never agree on those questions, and it largely had to do with the question of fairness. And that comes to, and that's another way of talking about shared risk. I've decided maybe that's what I'll just call it. We don't have that information about the footprint that we're talking about. And I think we would like to have gone there. We just didn't ever agree how we were going to talk about that ahead of time. And it is very difficult to decide whether an implementation program is fair or not, meets the anticipated shared risk that we all originally agreed to, without knowing what that specific thing is. And as a result, because we couldn't agree how to agree ahead of time whether something was fair, we kind of got stalled out. And I think that's really why I think that it is not a failure of process, but in fact a validation of this process that we come to the board now to try to sift out what are some of the things that we should just stop arguing about and move on from with your help. So those recommendations that we made about fish habitat, about that definition is basically our resource objective, that we go forward with that, and that we should get to a permanent water typing rule from the hybrid or interim rule, but that in fact is a goal, believe it or not. Maybe that's not totally clear. And then really that something along the lines of recommendation three is really something along the lines of, we're not really going to be able to decide ahead of time what shared risk is until you guys start digging into the issue, so get on with it. And that's really where I'm going there. On electrofishing, again, another external a piece of help that I think we need is, what are our orders there? Do we have a policy objective to reduce electrofishing beyond where we are now with the code of health surveys? That's a question largely answered by what our incidental take from it says. And that's not a question that's comfortably asked and answered in the policy forum. That's something I think that we need to, I think we all look at these, put the words down the page, but we haven't agreed how to handle it in terms of our marching orders. So I think, again, what are we supposed to do?
Does the caucus have an understanding, a grasp of how foundational the water typing system is to the overall set of resource objectives? I think you do, because clearly it's been an important emphasis of the caucus, but does it heard?